Yo, this coffee with oat milk is diggity dope.
Yeah, it's because oat milk is pure sugar.
It's made for humans, so.
Okay.
It is nice being back at the WeWork and having someone literally take your cup full of ice, go over to the tap, pull the thing down, and then hand it back to you. It's just the little things during the day that make you feel good.
Yeah. Sorry.
You're not going to give me that, huh? So, man, how you doing today? How's your week going? Tell me how you're feeling.
Pretty good. I mean, pretty bad. I had to make my own coffee this morning, so that's...
Yeah. What are you, some sort... Where do you live? In Jersey? In Manhattan, we don't pour our own coffee. You should come over more often.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know how we said no software is ever done the other week?
Yeah.
I happen to be listening to this podcast, Design Details, and they were talking about the same thing. And they came back and mentioned that embedded systems are like the only, they could think as the one counterexample.
That'd be awesome if every time I turned on my TV to watch an NBA game, I didn't have to get this giant message that LG has a new update for me.
Yeah.
So
that's true. They were saying the same thing. That's like once everything becomes internet of iOS, internet of shit, as they called it. It's like, this is no longer true. But like an embedded system, you know, like a microwave, that is like a software project. So that one you could treat like a waterfall. Like you have a spec file. It's like, you're building the bridge, I'm building the embedded system. You know, just start from the top. Just go right through it.
There's someone at GE right now, like writing specs for how do we get Alexa into our microwaves.
Yeah, so. That's true.
Yeah, that is a good one. Have you ever worked on any systems like that?
No. I've never started Redis before, bro. Just kidding. I have a very shallow threshold. I have this app on my phone. It says your face on it, and it says Ryan. And every time I get too deep in the stack, I just push that button on my phone, and you get a call.
What does it do? Oh, okay, it calls me. Yeah. <It's> like,
That'd actually be pretty good. We should make like a YouTube video about that. Like, I'm like coding, and it's like a message comes up on my screen. It's like, you need to add an index to this database column. And then I just take my phone out, I push the Ryan button, and then it shows you sleeping, and then you like wake up, and then you like open up shell, and then you like start like SSHing into some server somewhere. And I'm like out, like walking with like a latte in Manhattan, and like music starts playing. Oh my gosh.
Getting other people to pour you coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh, that's funny. One thing we want to talk about today. Welcome to Front End First. This is a podcast about web development. My name's Sam.
I'm Ryan.
And today we're going to be talking about some React stuff. Let's talk about this routing thing really quick, because it's something we've been running into. The client/one/projects versus /one versus /project/one.
Yeah. Why don't you explain that again? Because this is you gotta load the mental cache for this.
Yeah. Okay, so we're talking about dynamic apps with dynamic URLs. So let's do what is like a really easy example.
Post and comment.
Well, but comment usually wouldn't have its own page or its own URL. So how about what's like an app like? Let's do like folders and notes. So you have like, let's say you have like a notes app and you have /folders as the URL for seeing all folders. And then you click on a folder and then you go into that folder. So you're seeing the contents of that folder, which is a bunch of files. And then like you click on a file and you want like a full screen route of the file. So the question is, once you click the file, what should the URL be? And does what data you're displaying on the page affect that decision? So one option is to have the URL be /folder/123/file/456. So you're at folder ID 123, file ID 456. And conceptually, those models are nested. And now they're kind of nested in the URL. And, you know, that's just how you do it. So if you're making a Next.js app or any of these using any of these frameworks that use like folder structure under pages as a conventional way to do URLs, you'd have all those components under those folders, right? And the alternative is when you're in folder /1, and then you click on the file. Let's just stay with the ID. Sorry, it's 9 a.m. Folder /123, you click on file 456, then you see it. You could go to a route that's like /files/456 and without the folder /1 in front of it. Let me just riff here a little bit, and then you can kind of explain what you've been kind of teaching me from your Rails experience and from like a pretty influential post that went out back then. Mm-hmm. Now in Ember, we always talk about routing being nested, and the happy path in Ember is you're entering a hierarchy of routes. Now, usually this depends on the UI. So in the case I'm talking about, you click a file and that's all you see on the screen. If there's no data on the screen that is derived from the fact that you're in folder 123, you could imagine this thing being a root. It's just /files/123. But if you're in like a master detail UI, like a Spotify or, you know, Apple Music or even like the Notes app on a Mac OS, then you're going to have the folder 1 and all the files 123 and the files that are in it, as well as the selected one that you're displaying, all on the screen. So you're going to need to fetch that data. Ember is kind of like built for that UI. I mean, really, if you think about the router and the hierarchy and the conventions, it's really like, it almost seems like when they started, it was like, let's figure out the best way to build like a master details Spotify, Apple Music like app, right? Mm-hmm. And you have like this flow of data where you fetch all the things and then display it, and the outlet happens. And it's just like if you're familiar with React Router, they have an outlet. So it's a similar kind of thing. So if you're building this master detail view with these nested outlets, then to me, it makes sense that you would want the URLs to be nested, because when a user visits it, you want to query the folder's information based on that ID in the URL. But when you're making more full page apps where you click on the file and all you see is the file, maybe some related data about the folder, but there's this idea where like the URL containing both the files identifier as well as the folder's identifier puts more burden on you as a developer. You have to know what the ID of the folder is in order to link to the file. And sometimes that might not make sense. Mm-hmm. So are those all the factors that you'd consider there?
Yeah. So, I just want to echo, like, in with Ember, like, it is made for this. And so I do like with Ember having the nested URLs when I'm working on an Ember app. With something like Next, there's no outlet, right? So you don't have a way to say, like, you know, this controls the data fetching for the folder and this part controls the data fetching for the file. You just have a page component that renders. And so in that case, and Rails is like the same way, a server rendered app. Mm-hmm. You know, you have one controller,
one shot render first. Kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Because they're optimizing for like the SSR case, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I never really thought about that, but yeah.
Yeah. I guess technically that doesn't really matter, right? I mean, you can SSR a nested outlet rendered page. You could even SSR a next page that, uses like, you can do a thing where you only render index. You're not using Next router, you're using React router, and so you have outlets in there, but now we're outside of Next, so we're not really talking about Next.
Right. But yeah, I think it's a lot, you know, when you're generating links to these pages, the more nesting you have, the more data fetching you have to do to generate the link, right? So mm-hmm. if you have, you know, let's say you have like accounts, folders, files, that's like to generate that link, you need 3 IDs. And
if you're thinking about visiting the page just for the file on its own, now, like if you navigate there, you might already have that data in the cache somewhere. But if you reload the page, in order to get back, you have to get all of that related data.
Yeah. Yep. And it's more just like I'm on like a dashboard page and I want to link to file 123. It's a lot easier to link to /files/123 than, you know, okay, well, now I have to craft a query that, you know, gets the file, the folder it's in, the account it's under. Right. And these systems we work on, like the relationships just get, the web of the relationships just gets deeper and deeper. So now you have like I don't know, the version of the file. And, and it just keeps going out.
It's not going to get simpler as the app gets developed.
Yeah. I remember when we were building TED.com, there was a really big discussion about what our URLs should be. And a bunch of the programmers were like, look, we need to follow Rails, where it's like, you know, model slash ID. Or the Rails,
one,
I think.
For one level, basically.
For one level. I think Rails says, like, okay, you can do two. You can do, like, posts one slash comments. Mm. But they, you know, you shouldn't do a lot. And my thinking on, so I was like, clearly in the camp of the programmers. Not only should the URL be one level, but it should also be, like, a resource. So it should be, like, videos slash one.
As opposed to watch or something like that.
Exactly. And my view here kind of changed when one of the UX people was like, were like, no, these URLs communicate something to the user. It's not for the programmers. And so having watch slash watch in the URL is, it's meaningful to the user. And that kind of like was like a light bulb moment for me where you're like, oh yeah, this is like, it's actually part of the UI. It's part of the UI. And so going back to like your folder thing, like, there are some web apps where you actually want to see the folder you're in. Like if you're looking at a file and you're going to delete it, you might want to just glance at the URL and see the folder, especially if we're not using number IDs, but we're using something like slugs. Mm-hmm. That could be really meaningful to the user. So I think
that's interesting. Like Dropbox, you think about, like if you're browsing Dropbox, you want the URL to basically reflect the file structure. Like a feature. That's a feature for the user. It's helpful.
In that case, I might argue the file, like the full file path is like actually the ID, where it's, you know what I mean? But still, like maybe you're looking at a project, like you're doing project management software. You don't just want to see like tickets 1, 2, 3. You want to see like, you might want to see the name of the project.
Right.
Yeah. So I think
people talk about like hacking the URL and it's like, that's the thing. That's like, but that's, if that's something that users do, then maybe that's enough to push it into the product domain, right?
Yeah. And so I think it is. I think that's like kind of like the ultimate trump card here, is that it's like what does the user want to see? Is this so great that anytime you ask a question, I can just say I have like great cop out. Well, what does the user want to see?
Right, exactly.
But yeah, I like just to like, you know, show where I land, I like one level. When I'm using something like Next, I like one level. So like files 1, 2, 3, unless there is a product decision here to be made.
And right. Just because it's less burden on the development.
Yeah. And it's easy to generate things. Exactly. It's easy to generate links. We're working on a project now where, you know, a few weeks into the project, we're already, you know, we could already be three levels deep with our data model. And then, so like, that's a lot. And we're using GraphQL. So it's really easy to fetch all those relationships, because you just, you know, nest things and ask for the IDs. But it's still a burden on the developer to make sure you have all those things.
Right. Link to proposal, and it would be a function that lives in utils that makes a GraphQL request or whatever. And it's just annoying. Whereas like you might be on a page that's already fetching those things, and then if you have the ID, you should be good to go, you know?
Yep.
Cool. I was going to talk about suspense a little bit. So last week, I think we had started talking about it. I don't know if I had a chance to play with it yet, but I had tried to in my app, and I use SWR to fetch data. And I have this SWR lets you like configure a fetcher per call. And every time I've used it, I always just do it globally, and because I use the same fetcher, and that way I can configure my headers to be authenticated and return JSON from fetch or whatever. And so I went there and tried to enable suspense on my like SWR global config. And I was visiting a page, commented at all the things, and I was trying to get suspense working, and I kept running into issues, and so I like gave up. And then when I came back like a day or two later, I was looking at the docs, and when they introduce suspense, they show you using it on just one call to use SWR. And I was like, why don't they show configuring it globally? Like, it bothers me, because like same with the Fetcher thing. They show you passing a Fetcher in to use SWR, and like maybe that's the easiest way to get started, but it's just a huge pain in the butt. So it's like very soon after you start using SWR, are you using the global config? And I was just so confused by this, but I was like, whatever, I'll just follow this page exactly. So then I put suspense on one single call and then saw the same error, wrapped it in a suspense boundary with a fallback, and then it worked. So I wanted to talk about that first just because in case anyone tries to use it, I actually think if you happen to be using SWR, I'm not sure about the other libraries, I'm sure they have something similar, but it's such an easy way to get started. Just know that you don't want to turn every call into a suspense call, because then you have to have a fallback above it in the tree or else your app will crash. And my problem was I was rendering an auth provider that upon being rendered was making a call to use SWR, and it had no suspense boundary atop and above it.
I have a question about that. Would you recommend like just going to like the root of your tree and
Talk about that. So I want to get there because I haven't gotten that far yet. But I was basically there's a guy cleaning windows outside of New York. I follow this account on Instagram. It's called What Is New York? And there was a dude hanging out of the window, just wiping windows without any sort of suspense. Hey, but these guys have suspense on them. So that's good, but it still makes me a little anxious. But it's nice to see people needing their office windows cleaned again. You know what I mean? Anyway, so my homepage has all these multiple spinners like we talked about last time. And yeah, man, it's pretty awesome. So once I got that working, basically I had this big page component with all these queries. I think we talked about this, and I refactored them all into their own components so that the page component just like renders two components. They both happen to suspend on their initial render. And so now I have a fallback boundary. And first I tried this skeleton screen thing. Then I realized how much work skeleton screens are. And I saw, did we talk about this where I saw like a Twitter loading strategy on the podcast? I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast.
We haven't. That was,
I think, yeah. I was tweeting about it. And yeah, man, like skeleton screens are cool and everything, but like they are a lot of extra states in your app. A lot.
Yeah. It's like designing two different versions of your website.
Yeah, totally. Let's come back to this because there's a few things on the stack. I remember it's all just in my tweets this week, but I thought we had talked about it. So anyways, we're going to come back. Let's put a pin in the old skeleton screens. We'll come back to that. But that's what I started with. Then I didn't like it. I was browsing Twitter, saw how they do loading. They have this loading spinner, and it actually works really nicely. So I had a loading spinner that I made, put it in a suspense fallback, and then it worked. And it was really sweet because when you load the app, you just see that once. And I still have three different GraphQL requests that are going out concurrently, but I don't care. Because I just see the spinner and then it goes away. And I actually use like a frame or motion div to fade in the app once the suspense boundary actually renders. So that was really cool. So just to put out there, if you want to try suspense, SWR with suspense mode is pretty awesome. It's really easy. Just do it one call at a time. Because if you don't have a suspense component rendered as an ancestor and then you use a hook that suspends, it's going to be very confusing. It's not a good error. It's like you would expect it to see like the React error boundary error is like, oh, maybe you could wrap this in an error boundary. I was hoping to see something similar, like one of your components through a promise. If you want to render something here, wrap this component in suspense with a fallback.
Yeah, it's interesting. How often are you throwing a promise not for suspense?
I guess that's, yeah. I mean, you would think if a library has an API that's like suspense true, they could be more intelligent and say, we threw this promise expecting your app to suspend and it didn't.
But I think the whole idea is like SWR just throws a promise and it's like, someone above me is going to handle it. It can't catch its own throw because it's kind of throwing it out to the world.
Right. Interesting.
Anyway.
But so that was really interesting. So a few things I want to talk about. Okay, so first of all, my auth provider is at the root of my app. we do this a lot in our Next apps. We have like an all providers component. You kind of run into this. Kent Dodds wrote a blog post about this. I was tweeting about this at one point. And it's like, you can't, you know how sometimes when you start writing your own providers and then you make a hook that accesses the context from the provider and you try to use the hook outside of the provider, it just gets these errors. So what you end up doing in things like Next is your underscore app page, which exports your app component, which wraps everything. You split that into two components because you need a component boundary between the providers and any other component in your tree that uses any sort of context that's being provided. So you have like an app outer and an app inner. An app outer renders provider, 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 and then app inner. And then within app inner and within all your page components and all of your like UI components and the folder components, you can go to town with all your hooks. And that's just a nice way to do it. So that's cool. But what happened is that my auth provider, auth SWR provider, sets up on rendering. So I'm going to talk through this and maybe you can help me because I think I know where I want to go with this. But when you render the provider, like your you have an effect. I have an effect that sets up Firebase and checks for the current user and sets up like an on current user change. And if it changes, then it will set some React state, right? Sets the current user. And that's what's being provided so that all my other components can use auth and see if there's a current user or not. Mm-hmm. It also provides functions like login and logout that reference the Firebase app that's set up in the effect. So that was because like when you load the app, there's no public pages in the app, basically. I mean, there's a sign-in, but you only see that if you're unauthed. So there's like auth-only and unauth-only pages. There's no like public page. So we basically, just for simplicity, when I was starting, this is my fitness side project, I just wanted to check for the current user on initial render of the app. But from a perspective of making everything suspend, so what I want to do is have this new loading spinner work for everything. I have this, the loading spinner took care of my initial queries for my page, but I still have a flash of a loading message because when I first render the app on the server or the first render of the client, it's loading. And I want to handle all of these things with a single suspense boundary if possible. That's my goal. So what I think I'm going to do is in the auth component, it uses the effect to set up Firebase and it uses SWR. That's what I was missing. It also calls off SWR to fetch the current user from Hasura, which works by sending the token that Firebase gives it and then validating against my Firebase backend to give me the current user on the Hasura side, so on my data layer side. That fires on render. What I think I want to do is make that fire on the first time I run use auth or use current user or whatever, pull that out of the provider. I can still set up Firebase, that's fine. But I want to put that into a hook and therefore I don't need to wrap any of the providers in suspense. And basically I don't want any provider to like, basically the provider shouldn't do any sort of like rendering or well, they're not really doing rendering. They shouldn't use SWR.
Data fetching.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, I was going to say, like, I don't have this problem in my app because I only get the user from Firebase. And that is async, but I only get the user from Firebase. Any data that I'm getting from Hasura is like done later on in the components. Where you're, and I don't think it's
that's
bad
what I
that
want
you're doing.
To. That's what I want right. to do. I think.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So I think so, I want this, and I think I want this to be the pattern going forward for my or our. I mean, this is again, yes. This is already how you're doing it, but I think in the past I've just as a point of simplicity, like my auth provider is just going to set up everything, do the initial fetch, and then provide all these things, and but you lose some control there once you get to this point in the app where you want some more control. So yeah. I would like to see, I think, an all providers, and then I see my app, and maybe there's a third component here because if app were to use current user, then I would need to put a suspense boundary in all providers with rendering logic for the loader and the header. I don't really want to do that. I want my shell, I want my first render to be the header and like a loader. And I want it to be on the server and I want it to be on, I want it to be on the initial render of the client. And this is another thing. I have this stupid little thing, which I do in a lot of my next apps, because you need your server render to line up with your first render in the client. So I have like, is server render type of windows undefined? Is initial render like initial render false, use effect, initial render true or whatever. And that's stupid too. I'd actually rather just render a loading spinner if I don't have data and if, or if the data is suspending and handle it in one place. So I think I'm going to end up with a really nice pattern where you have providers, you have like the app shell, which is like the head tag, the header, maybe the footer, and renders the component, and it renders a suspense boundary. It renders children, and then the children renders app, which renders like login or the component, or and then the app component uses auth and decides whether to show the login form or not. But there's a middle one that's the shell, which is, has like the single suspense boundary in the whole app, which I think is going to be really nice, because just why not start simple, kick it all the way up. Yep. You have your app shell and you just show a spinner on every route that you change. And I think it's going to be really good. And like, I was looking at Twitter, man, and like this, I almost have it working except for the auth part, but I put it on my different pages and I was clicking around my app and it looked like Twitter does. And like, Twitter's loading experience is great. Like, all the buttons respond instantly. You see these little blue spinners, but they're nice and fast, and it really is not a big deal. And I was pretty impressed with how fast I had something that was really close to it.
Nice. I have a question. Is a header in your app, is it always shown?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
So I think like what you're trying to avoid is like this, because this thing is always shown, I don't want to suspend it.
I don't want to suspend it.
Yeah. And that's why you're saying I'm going to put the header above the suspense boundary, or like the layout above the suspense boundary.
Exactly. Now there is user data in the header, but that can flash in. But honestly, I actually want to just make that, I'm going to move that to the bottom. I want it to be a tab on the bottom anyways. Cool. The way it is like an Instagram, but I want the header and then I just want a spinner right there. And I want that to be the first render in the server and on the client. But the reason it's rendering like that on the client is not because it's the first render. It's because you're rendering something that's suspending. That to me was like a key moment where it's like, you're not doing a trick. It's nice because you're not doing a trick anymore. This is really cool. So on the server, the way we write next apps, you and I, and because we write next apps that have user data, is we do our data fetching on the client. That's kind of like, from my understanding, the recommended way to do it, because it's easier to deal with sessions and all these kinds of things. When you do that, you run into this problem where, because you only have the session on the client, your first render of the app on the server and next does SSR, your first render on the server is never going to have client data. It's going to have some static version. So it's going to have like a loading state or splash screen. And then when you render on the client, you do things like, well, I guess you're fetching data inside of an effect. What happens?
Here's an example. So on the server, you never have user data, right? You just never have user data on the server because we don't want that to be cached. Mm-hmm. On when you render on the client, you don't have user data on initial render because if the fetches happen in effects. But there are some things you know. So if you don't see like a cookie, if the user has no cookies, you know before you fetch anything, you know right away that they're not logged in. So that initial render could be the login screen, but then it doesn't match the server render. So we do a bunch of like juggling here where, as you said, like is initial render or is offloading. There's just a bunch of weird juggling you have to do to make those two frames match.
Right. So it was a situation like that. Now that one,
I have a question. Like, I never really thought about this, but with suspense, if you're rendering and then like one of your components throws and then you start rendering a suspense boundary, like what happens on the server? Like, what does the server render for that? What is like the initial output and the next step?
It would be the fallback.
Okay.
I'm guessing. Why wouldn't it? It has to give you a frame. I mean, that's all part of the first render, right?
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm guessing.
I actually
that
don't
sounds,
know.
That actually sounds awesome. If that sounds awesome, it's
yeah.
We've never had a system in React where it says I can start rendering and then I can like go render something else.
Well, that's kind of what I was saying, and I have to play with this a little bit more before I can like be really confident in what I'm saying. But I think this, once I get this wired up, once I pull the automatic data fetch out of my auth provider and turn it into something that only happens once a component first calls use auth, I'll be able to wrap that component in a suspense boundary with the loading spinner, and that will cause it to be the same initial frame on the server, and I'll get to remove that thing. Sometimes, mm-hmm. So what you said is true, where sometimes you have like, you don't have a cookie, you know they're not logged in, and you're going to get a render that disagrees with the server. But sometimes you get further down the tree on the client, and then you have some data fetching going on, and because you're further down the tree, your rendering doesn't match. But that's always because it was hard, again, to like have the parent orchestrate what's happening. So what I'm hoping for is I want to end up with a nice pattern where I have my providers that don't do anything. You can just render them and they can set things up, but they don't do data fetching. Yeah, they don't suspend. Exactly.
Because they're at the root. You think of providers as being outside of UI. That's exactly how we treat providers. We think of them as like global services that are outside of UI. Exactly. And so the fact that they suspend means they're inside of UI. Which...
Exactly. Great way to say it. So as soon as you have something that suspends, you want to make sure that you have control of it in the UI, which means you don't want to be touching that all providers. You just want it to be providing things and rendering the children. That's it.
Yep.
Then you have an app shell thing, which is, I think, where you do this if you want this root suspense boundary. Then you have all your page components and login form if you want and all that stuff. So I think that'll be pretty cool.
By the way, this would be a great blog post or video just walking through like how you architect this, you know, once you figure it out.
yep, totally. Okay, let's talk about skeleton screens really quick and just why I want to get this pattern working with like a root suspense boundary, because basically my first attempt here was I tweeted this little API where you have like a index page, which is rendering your friends banner, like friends list, and then my week components. And then you have a suspense boundary around it with a fallback of the skeletons. And I'm like, I just want a good DX here. And I want to have my friends list component in like component/friends list or whatever, friends list. And then I want to be able to have a skeleton screen. So I did it as like a static property on the component. So you can like render friends list. You import friends list, or you can render it, or you can render friends list.skeleton. And it's just some HTML, and it's right there in the same file as my friends list. I can copy and paste it with the padding and stuff, but like put little gray boxes while it's loading, and I can just make a little toggle thing so I can design it. First of all, it's hard. It's hard because the layouts are complicated, and to get it perfectly lined up and everything, it's just hard, and it's going to change over time. It's going to make me not want to change that as much because now I have to change two things instead of one. And to get it to line up correctly with the thing there, and also in this case, like my week component, which shows me all of the goals that I have and how many entries I have in each goal, is dynamic. So some weeks I have 3 goals, some weeks I have 4. So now your skeleton screen is like guessing about how many goals you have, and is it even better? And I've even thought about this. You open an app with a skeleton screen, you're kind of anxious. Like, you have to look at it and see, like, is this data or is this fake data? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I tried this thing a few weeks ago where I was caching the results from my queries. Like, if you had a week with like 3 entries, I had like a cache that I could just write 3 to. So the next time the skeleton screen rendered, it would literally render three skeletons.
Oh my gosh.
And then like, because I was running into a thing where like.
Wait,
I
on would, the client?
Yeah.
But wait, exactly. What if you know, you'd have to have fetched the data to know that you have three, in which case, why would you render a skeleton screen to begin with?
Because you close the tab and you come back.
Oh, but it's so, just like a best guess about how many there were based on your last interaction or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so there was gosh. Like, there was like, cause I was dealing with a page that's like, it either has 1, 5 or like 50. And so like, just, I couldn't make it look good. It was like,
yeah.
Oh, it looks really good in the one state. But then when I go to the 50 state, it looks atrocious.
Yeah.
So I did this and I was like, oh, this is cool. And then it got so complex, I started using like effects to cache and read that data. Oh so God. Then I ended up having an empty render. So I was like, oh, my skeleton screens need a skeleton screen. And that's the point.
That's Sharp the tools, point where man. I was like, React.
That's the point where I went in and I deleted every. I just select all, delete.
There's some points in programming when you start writing mocks for your mocks, when you start writing skeletons for your skeletons, that's when the camera just pans out. You just grab the old Woodford, pop it open,
yeah,
give yourself a glass. Oh my gosh, man, that's so funny. Yeah, that's a lot. So it's a lot of work, man. Needless to say, it's a lot of work. And I was clicking around Twitter and noticing that they use these little blue spinners everywhere, and it's actually quite pleasant. And if Twitter's engineering team can't be bothered to make skeleton screens for all of their pages, maybe I can't either. And actually, maybe that's a sign that it's actually not worth it.
Yeah.
And honestly, sometimes skeleton screens do bother me. Like you look at them, they always say that they're better or whatever. But it's kind of like you're looking at it and you're trying to wait and see. And then it's like, I'd almost rather just see a spinner. Oh, it's not ready yet. And then look back at it. You know what I mean? It mm-hmm. kind of, there's some, a little bit of, I've seen skeleton screens done very well and it can help, but sometimes there's some anxiety there, in my opinion, where you're looking at it and it's like, oh wait, is it ready? Is it not? I'd rather just know it's loading than like be tricked into thinking it. You know what I mean? It feels more mentally taxing sometimes to look at this big, like shimmering thing. Anyways.
I just want to say, I can totally see that. Like there's some skeleton screens where it's like the skeletons load and then like data populates at different rates. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's like it's more. It actually is more cognitively demanding to do that transition than to just see a spinner. Also, like, do any iOS apps use skeleton screens? I don't know. I don't think they do. They use swipes to transition and buy some time to load data, and they use a lot of loading spinners. But they're nice loading spinners that are one loading spinner in the middle of the page. Or the window dims down while something's loading, things like that. And I think as a first pass, that's good, both from a UX perspective, but also more importantly from the amount of engineering effort required. And
yeah.
What I've realized in the last week or two is that with React, or at least the frameworks that we've used, because the router and the renderer are separate, you are basically, this problem is forced upon every developer, because when you click a link, you have to render something. There's no notion of, even now we have suspense now, but you can't stop the render ever. So when the user clicks a link, if you have data fetching to do, you have to deal with what you do in between before the data fetching is done. And so just out of the box, Next.js, you click a link, you're going to see a white page or an error. If you haven't considered it, until the data comes back, if you do data fetching on the client the way we do, the way is recommended for client-specific data. So that's why I think this is so important, because if I can get a nice pattern with the suspense boundary in one place at the root of the app, it shoves that little loader, first of all, in the specific pages, and then you can reuse it if you want more granular control as you go on. But as a starting point, you now at least have the loading state accounted for, and you don't feel the burden of having to design a loading screen for each individual page of your app. But like a lot of times the apps feel broken, man. Like, you know, you can look at a lot of apps. Like I love Next to Death, but like if you just click around, you know, if you're fetching data on the client, you have to deal with those loading screens. A lot of people don't do it. And yeah, just kind of interesting. I wish there was in Next a way at the route level, in the same way that you can have the hooks like get server side props that block the transition until the async function resolves. I wish there was some way to do that with Next Router, where I click on the thing and I render the component. Maybe if you render the component first, like off screen, until it no longer suspends, then you know it's ready, then you transition. And that would let you stay on the previous page and show like a loader, you know, something like that. I know in the Remix demo, they talked about this a little bit too. And I think because they run all their code, a lot of their code, their actions, they have like the notion of server-side actions that you export along a component. You can do that. You can fetch, then render. I don't mean that from the perspective of rendering a single component. I mean fetch, then transition. So
right.
you click on a link, you fetch the data needed for the next URL, and then you transition to it. So it's more like a server rendered experience from that perspective. So anyways, all that to say, like I understand it's like how, you know, it works in Rails or whatever, which is great, but a lot of native apps have this pattern where you click a link, you instantly respond, and then you see a loader, which makes the app feel a lot faster. But we shouldn't discount the extra engineering effort that requires, and that should be something you opt into instead of forcing on everyone at the gate.
Yeah I mean,
I think that's my perspective on it right now.
So, server rendered apps.
I mean, I get it. Yeah, I get it.
Man, it's hard. It's hard. I mean, it's hard. Hopefully, we'll get, like you said, more data fetching that doesn't depend on render, right?
Yeah,
and that will give us the tools to say I can fetch. Wait for my fetch to come back and then render this component so that the component doesn't have to deal with, oh, its effects are running and they haven't fetched the data yet. So exactly. Move data fetching out of effects and have basically have a place where it can live. Ember's router.
Yeah, no, really. Ember's router would be nice to have for lots of teams, because it's very complex and you ship a feature and then you click the back button or you reload the page and click the back link. And it's like, you see a white screen. It's like, what's happening? There's just a lot of extra states to deal with there. Maybe if you have some nice suspense patterns that kind of start percolating throughout the community, and all you need is, as a starting point, one root level suspense boundary with a nice loader. Maybe your app just feels a lot faster all of a sudden because you're clicking around and every click is like happening instantly. So you never have users like sitting there trying to see, like, did I click anything or not? So you're on the new page instantly, but you're just seeing a loader now. And maybe there's some patterns where like you can use the fact, like this would actually be kind of crazy. Like, could you use the fact that my children are suspending to, yeah, I don't know. Like, again, render something off canvas. Like,
yeah, that's it.
Could your suspense, like, once your suspense, could you like render something that suspends and then once it doesn't, like, has a callback, like, did render router.push? Basically, it's kind of like, I think you want a way to like aggregate all of the children that are suspending and then fire a callback when there's no longer being suspended. The UI is no longer suspended, so that now you know you have what you need to do something, you know?
Yeah. I always think of Framer Motion's animate presence here, because it will keep unrendered children around while it's animating them out, and then it will unrender them. Mm-hmm. From your app's point of view, you've already unrendered them, but it's just keeping them like mm-hmm. viewed. So maybe there's like the reverse of that, where you, like you said, render something off screen, whether it's suspense or not, let it finish its data fetching and then bring it in.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like a concept in my head. I have no idea how that would actually work in practice.
But capture the children and then, animate them away once the fallback goes away and you actually render the children inside the boundary.
this is why. I mean, this here is like, this goes back to a discussion we've been having for years. It's SPAs are hard.
Yeah, it's the middle class stuff. I just thought about this. Yes. Is like, this might be the first time I've actually thought about this, like, in the context of the React work we've been doing. And it's like, you just get on. If you haven't heard us talk about this before, the middle class, it's like this, it's idea of like your average development team. There's nothing wrong with being average. There's teams that are better than average. There's teams that are worse than average. But the idea is like people who are just are average developers and empowering them to make good apps and having them fall into the pit of success. And if you put an average team with Next and have them just use the Next router links the way the docs tell you, I think it's going to be not the best experience, you know, with user fetch data.
Yeah, because you can't stop the render. So you always have to have that zero state, or you're like returning null at the top of your components with no data, but yeah. You just always have that zero render. And
exactly.
We've run into this.
Again, I will say like a lot of the Next stuff they try to account for, like these really big sites with like, millions or like tens of thousands of URLs with lots of public pages, so like an Amazon.com, and they have lots of good tools for that where you're pre-rendering the thing or you're rendering it on the server. The incremental static regeneration stuff is great for that. You click on it, you fetch the data, then you render. So fetch data, then transition would be nice to have on the client, because that's, in my opinion, the best place to do it for user-specific data. It's how I like building apps. It's simple. I get to use things like Hasura because a lot of the backend work is so kind of standardized. So interesting. Hopefully I'll get to see where this ends up. And if I end up with a good pattern, I would definitely share it. So
nice.
Yeah. Cool. Time to get to work.
No, we can go for a few more hours.
Awesome. I guess we will wrap it up for this week. So fun to be back on the mics. What is our fourth week in a row?
Yeah, I think so.
Awesome. Very cool. All right, everyone. Well, thanks for joining us. We have all of our show notes over at frontendfirst.fm. And until next week, until next time, we'll see you next week. Until we see you, have a good week. Have a good weekend, everybody. Have a good week. You're going to hear this on a Monday.
Bye, everyone.